Welcome to the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. This special series was recorded live at the Market Council Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada. Listen in as we talk with leaders in our industry represented at this wonderful event. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. We are still live from the Market Council Summit meeting in beautiful Las Vegas, Four Seasons Hotel. Our next guest is Sharon Ash. She's the Chief Litigation Counsel for Hamburger Law Firm. And we're going to dive into three major topics when it comes to what they do at the Hamburger Law Firm for financial services professionals. So, Sharon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, let's just start by telling everybody what you do exactly.
Sure. So our objective is to really help entrepreneurs realize their dreams. So we're here in a supportive role to help guide them through many of the business and legal issues that, if not identified early on, could pose hazards to them that could easily be mitigated or perhaps avoided completely if they just know where they are. And so we will work with an advisor who frequently is sitting at a firm that they're not very happy with anymore. And for whatever reason, they're looking to make a change. And it could be changing to a firm that's already in existence, or it could be that they would like to establish their own firm. So we will, in just conversations with them and understanding really what it is that they're trying to build and what it is that they're running away from. What are the hazards that they have that lie between where they are right now and where they want to get to?
Now, this is an emotionally charged move for so many of them, right? And I think because of you, the blinders are taken off. Like, they have massive issues or something may have happened, cultural or whatever, with their previous firm, and they want to leave. And some of them do it in haste, which I'm assuming is a really bad thing to do. But what are some of those hazards that you have found that you need to bring to an advisor's attention so they don't make a misstep?
So most often they're concerned about their ability to continue to work with their clients. Rarely is it a goal to leave, to go to a new job, and to start all over. Right? Who wants to do that?
I don't want to do that.
So the objective is to help them navigate what are often contractual restrictions. There are some restrictions that are embedded in regulatory policies, procedures, rules that they have to follow, that they are sort of the disguised employment restrictions that they may not be aware of. So as we are helping them navigate this pathway, we are educating them along the way about what their contractual restrictions are, how the regulators behave in scenarios like this, how state law may pose some impediments, but also at the core are their relationships with their clients. And so we are really digging down deep and exploring how do they get their clients? Where do they come from? What's the longevity of those relationships? And how are the clients likely to react at the point that they learn that the advisor that they've trusted, the guy who sat across the dining room table from them for a decade or more, is suddenly at a new firm and may no longer be accessible to them? So we're looking to bring some element of predictability to a process that is all a new world to them.
Now, gosh, there's so much in what you just said there that I want you to elaborate on. Let's talk about the client aspect of it first, if that's all right. Because you're absolutely right. Nobody wants to start over. That's not true. I shouldn't say nobody. The majority of people don't want to start over. And the majority of people do have those deep relationships that they cherish, right? This is beyond just a money-making opportunity. These are people who you've been just invested in their lives. How can you help? And maybe can you give us a story or some of the hazards that you have helped people navigate to maintain those relationships?
Sure. I mean, they're leaving. Advisors who are leaving and transitioning to another firm that provides to them greater capabilities, or they're leaving and they're starting their own firm as a registered investment advisor. Those moves are motivated by a client-centric purpose. There is a reason that they're making this move, and it's to improve that performance and that client-related experience. And so probably the most challenging thing that advisors face, and it's really a struggle for them, is that while they're planning their next move and they have their eye on the client the entire time, they can't tell the clients in advance that they're leaving. And that is most often the greatest struggle, that they feel as though they are potentially going to be perceived as deceiving the client on the way out the door. And the reaction of clients in reality is often, once their advisor leaves and they hear, is often, well, why didn't you tell me? And so it's navigating that and preparing them for that experience, but underscoring for them that if they were to discuss with their clients in advance what their plans are, not only are they giving up control of their transition plan because it could be expedited, where suddenly they thought they were leaving in 6 months and they need to leave in 6 minutes, but they're giving up that control, but they're also placing their clients in harm's way, because who's the best witness to say, what did the client know before my advisor was leaving? It's the client. And where that client has decided to make a transition, well, now the firm that that advisor works for, they don't have any incentive to leave that client alone. And so that client becomes a witness simply because of what they knew before you resigned. So helping advisors understand not only what the risks are, but helping them see that they really are, and it's completely consistent with their purpose for leaving, is to tell the clients at the appropriate time. And that's after you leave, because you really are protecting your client. And it's the greatest way that you can protect the ability to continue to work with that client, protect the relationship.
Now, you had said when we were talking about preparing for the podcast that as a breakaway, there are two kind of areas that you focus on to make sure that you help them navigate. One is employment, the employment risk, right, the contractual risks. But then the other one, which I didn't understand or I hadn't even thought about, is the regulatory aspects. Pick which one you'd like to start with. I'd like to unpack both of them, please.
Sure. So I think that the most common one that occurs to advisors first is their employment risk. They are generally concerned about what their contracts say, what they may and may not do, either while they're planning to resign and even after. That's the non-solicit restriction. They've all read in the media about the dreaded temporary restraining order, or TRO. They all want to know, what does that mean? And if I get hit with a TRO, what will it cost me? And what's the impact of it? What will the scope of that judge's order say? Can I still talk to my clients? What if the client still says, I want to do business with you? Can they take that business? So that, understandably, is a primary focus. But what they are not so focused on, but is frankly probably the biggest driver of litigation in this area, is client data and the taking of information to facilitate the continuation of that advisor-client relationship. So the protection of data, it's an employment issue for sure. Every advisor is bound to, at a minimum, policies and procedures of the firm, and also federal regulations that protect client privacy, and also state privacy laws. So all of those things woven together can create some hazards that you need to navigate on your way out from an employment standpoint. But what many don't realize is the second area of risk, which is the regulatory one, which comes out of those same privacy-related issues.
Wow. So, okay. Because I wouldn't have realized that the regulatory aspects would have come out from those privacy issues. Explain that more deeply, if you don't mind.
Sure. So you have an employment contract that says that you're not permitted to take the trade secrets of the firm. Well, what constitutes a trade secret in the context of an advisor making a move? It's your client list. And uniformly, where an advisor walks out the door with a list of clients tucked under his or her arm, if they're not permitted by either an industry protocol or by contract to be able to take that list, then you are creating potentially a legal dispute over the fact that there's a list tucked under the arm. That trade secret list now becomes the subject of a regulator who asks, exactly what is that information that you are accused of taking on your way out the door? So now the regulators effectively act as the henchmen for the firm. They are now coming in and creating a secondary dispute over the taking of that very same client list. And the impact on a transitioning advisor is significant. It's highly distracting to be fighting not only your previous employer, but to now being subjected to answering questions by your regulator.
Okay, I apologize for my ignorance here. How is client data, just data, name, address, social security number, blah, 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 how is that a trade secret?
Well, let's take off the table social security number, because that will bring you a whole host of additional legal issues. So let's stick with just that basic contact information.
Okay.
Because I think it's so natural to think that these are my clients. These are the clients that I've worked with for the, you know, could be the duration of your time at that firm. And those clients, they certainly identify the face of the firm with their advisor. But as a matter of the legal relationship is not with the advisor, it's with the firm. And so the firm will argue in disputes like this that it's really the firm's reputation, goodwill, branding, that's what drove the client to be secured as a client. And it can be very difficult to parse how much of the influence over a client's decision to initiate a relationship, how much came from the firm's reputation versus how much came from the individual advisor.
Okay. Wow, that makes all that. But now I'm scared, right? I mean, this is, what about social media? So what happens if I've connected with you on a social media platform, whether that's personally or professionally? So I have all of your information there. What happens with that? I mean, I understand I'm asking for you to make generalizations, but can you help us understand that a little bit?
Yeah. So the distinction that you drew in your question is an important distinction. Are you connected with that person on a business-oriented social media platform, or are you connected with that person because you're posting pictures of your kids and vacation and so on? And there's a real blending. And this business in particular, how many times have you heard this is a relationship-based business? But what came first? The friendship, and then they became a client? Or is it a client that you became friendly with over a period of years? Because that becomes a really slippery slope where you've had a client for 10 years, 20 years, maybe even longer. Now you've been folded into the family. Now you've gone to anniversary parties, weddings, and so on. So there is a real blending. And I think that you see that blending most evident in social media postings. So it's not a clear path. There are firms that have realized that social media is the back door to the very same types of claims we were just talking about, the trade secret. It's the way you get the list out. So how do firms combat that? Initially, social media policies were geared towards compliance. They were geared towards monitoring what it is that the advisor was saying on social media to make sure that it was being done in a compliant manner, to make sure that they were capturing those posts, again, for compliance-related reasons. Now you have social media policies that have evolved into policies where the firm can claim when you've left that your social media connections are the trade secrets of the firm and you've forfeited your right to your account. Now it's extreme, but it's out there.
At the Market Council Summit here, right, we've interviewed a whole bunch of companies that are trying to attract breakaway advisors, right? One of the things that the Hamburger Law Firm does is also helps mitigate some of that risk in recruiting. Would you mind talking about that?
Sure. So, you know, one of the greatest points I think that a firm who is going into the recruiting space, what they need to know is that the risk that comes with any of their recruits is also their risk. They own it. And so how do you control that risk? You control the process. So when we're working with a firm that's engaged in recruiting, our very first step is to understand how they came across this recruit and why they want the recruit. because it's important to realize, why are you engaging in this process to begin with? Is it because you're hiring the talent and you're going to get into a new geographic area, perhaps? Maybe you're going to open up a new office. Maybe they have knowledge of some area of the space that you're not currently engaged in, and so you're increasing your service capabilities. But knowing why you're engaging in that recruiting is going to help us identify the risks that you should be taking and should not be taking. If a client tells me that they are hiring someone purely for talent-based reasons, and that person, that recruit, has post-employment restrictive covenants, meaning those are the non-solicit covenants. Those are the choices that you have to make. Are we going to strictly observe those covenants, or are we going to seek to dance between some raindrops and move some business of that advisor? Well, you have to step back and say, well, let's go back to that very first conversation. When you told me that this person was being hired purely for talent, well, if that's the case, why are we taking risk of having them bring business? Let's observe the restrictions, or let's take a far more conservative approach. And you're still keeping your eye on your primary business objective, which is to bring that talent. And conversely, if the objective is we are bringing this person over to increase the size of our business, to bring over that book of business, well, now we need to look at that restrictive covenant in a very different light.
Those restricted covenants or restricting covenants, is there a length of time? Is there any sort of precedent or anything? Is there a maximum that you've run across, or is there a norm where if our listeners are thinking, well, goodness gracious, I really want to get into this space, can you provide any sort of guardrails for them?
Yeah, so probably the most often cited period of time in this industry is a year. That's pretty common. If there's a restriction, it's not at all surprising to see a year. But there are a number of firms that have far shorter restrictive time periods that are perhaps 30 days, 90 days, but they're disguised in a way that is not exactly called a restriction. Mm-hmm. And we call those notice periods or garden leave periods. So if there is a restriction like that in someone's contract, we have to start there, because it really is. It's the way that they can be boxed out right out of the gate from talking to their clients, where they are in a blackout period for that period of time. So 1 year, probably the most common. Beyond that, I mean, we've seen as long as 10 years. Good luck getting that enforced.
My very limited understanding of all of this is, if you are a professional, when you switch to some other organization, you shouldn't be able to be stopped performing your profession. So how does that fit in with all of this, or am I totally wrong?
No. So it's actually, it's very complicated, because you've built your career and now you simply want to move to another firm. Mm-hmm. There's a difference, however, between whether you are restricted from trying to encourage your clients to do business with you at your new firm, or are you actually prohibited from accepting the business of your clients at your new firm? So that's the difference between the former being the non-solicit. That's where you can't go out and initiate those communications to try to convince clients to follow you. The non-compete, however, is the scenario where you've left your firm, you've taken nothing with you, you have not reached out to any clients, and they find you. They call you and say, I heard you left. You're my guy. What do I have to do to continue to do business with you? And there are contractual restrictions out there that say you can't accept that business. And there are firms that will seek to enforce that you may not accept that business. And their defense is, we're not stopping you from engaging in your profession. We're just telling you that for the duration of the restriction, you just have to fish in a new pond.
But I'm a client. I want to work with you. isn't it my right? You don't own. Okay, I might be. You might have got me a little fired up here. I apologize. but I mean, come on. That's not even. That's what the heck.
The word you're looking for is unreasonable.
Okay, I was looking at some other words, but unreasonable is probably a lot more appropriate. Okay.
So, and that's the standard. And that's the battleground issue.
Okay.
So in most states, other than California, most states, the battle is the scope of this restriction, is it reasonable? And the issues will often come down to exactly what you have just expressed, which is that client frustration that I should be able to exercise my own freedom of choice.
Totally.
Right? I should be able to continue to do business with who I want to do business with. And if this is the guy that I've trusted for the past 10 years of my financial life, who are you to tell me that I can work with anybody in the world except for the guy I trust?
Wow. Okay. I'm not even going to California because I'm assuming that's a totally...
It's a totally different ballgame.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the third phase. So we spent a little bit of time talking about the advisor themselves breaking away. Then we talked a little bit about you recruiting the advisor. Now, let's talk about something else that you do at the Hamburger Law Firm, which is regulatory enforcement challenges. What does that mean exactly?
So this is where you typically will have an unwilling and unwelcome interaction with your regulator. So that can come up in a couple of different ways that are probably most common to your listeners. One could be right out of the gate when you're leaving. Now, we've talked about the trade secret type of claim where there's a regulatory inquiry. But how about those situations where on your way out the door, your employer, your former employer, decides that your industry record needs to be marked up, and it's the last slap on the way out the door. So now suddenly you find that you're under internal review for some compliance-related violation. And so that can and will immediately prompt a regulatory inquiry. Those happen as a matter of course. And so it's an automatic issue that you have to deal with. And it can lead to sanctions. And so it's important right at the outset to understand what were the allegations that were made against you. And to make sure, let's get to your firm before they file anything on your industry record. And let's begin the dialogue to find out what exactly they think they have. And is this an internal review, or is this something where they've actually made allegations against you? There are differences between those two things. And an internal review is not something that the public ever sees on your industry record, unless there's some further activity that finds that you did something wrong. But where there are allegations that have been made against you, that information, even from the very beginning when your former firm marks up your record, that feeds through to the public immediately. So think about that for a minute as a financial professional who's leaving a broker-dealer. And you get information on the way out the door that allegations have been made against you, that you engaged in some compliance-related activity, let's say an outside business activity that was never approved, mm-hmm. and they mark it on your U5, which is your document that they file on your way out. Now suddenly, not only is it a regulatory investigation that you have to talk to FINRA about and navigate that process, but the firm that reported that information has now also created a marketing tool. Because what are they going to do? They're going to tell every one of your clients that your advisor has a regulatory issue. You should go look at that broker check report. So it's really important before it even hits the report that where we hear that someone may be subject to an adverse reporting, a derogatory reporting, we want to get involved right away. We want to be engaged in the dialogue. And if there's going to be a reporting, then we want to mitigate the language and the impact of that language as best we can. because it is far more effective to change that language before it gets reported than it is to seek to change it later.
How long can that stay on? Like if you fight that and it's put out there, can you get it taken off immediately? Is it there forever?
So if there's a reporting on your broker check report, you are often going to need to wait until the regulator's investigation concludes, and then you'll tackle what we'll refer to as the civil aspect of seeking to change your record. So that's the expungement proceeding that advisors will hear about. Expungement is a pretty high bar. It's also a process that's under attack by every lawyer out there who represents investors, who says, you know, these industry records, they have to be truthful, which I think we would all agree with. The problem is that it doesn't have to be truthful for there to be an allegation made against you. And the minute the allegation is made, it hits your public report. So we are often engaged in that process, either in the context of a transition or it will come later, where we are advocating and helping advisors make sure that their industry record is their record. It's the record they own. It's the record that they have to take responsibility for, but it should be truthful and accurate. How many people out there would like to have a copy of, you know, their credit report circulating, credit decisions being made, and the information on there isn't yours? You didn't default on that mortgage. You didn't commit that credit card fraud, but it's on there. So what do you do first? You go and you get it cleaned up, and then you move forward. The expungement process is exactly the same.
This just seems to be giving power outside of a person who genuinely wants to help the relationships that they have. I guess I'm a little baffled by that. I'm going to finish by asking you a question I hear all the time. So at Top Advisor Marketing, we do social media for our clients. And we have had clients, not in our current state, but I've worked with clients in the past who have broken away from whatever. And one of the things that they did after they broke away was they updated their LinkedIn profile to the new firm. And there has been litigation saying that that's a solicitation. Okay, you're nodding. People can't see.
There is. So it's again... It's a gray area.
Okay.
On one side, you have the affirmative obligation to update anywhere that you have held yourself out as a representative of pick the firm.
Sure.
That you can no longer hold yourself out once you've resigned and you're on the other side. So you need to update it. The wrinkles, if you will, appear when you have to decide, what do you do with that update? Are you pushing your update out to your network, or are you simply updating as you are required to do to indicate that you're no longer a representative of your prior firm? And there are a lot of factors that you'd want to consider whether you're going to push out your update or not.
That's a click of a button, Sharon. It's literally a click of a button.
Indeed it is.
Oh my God.
Indeed it is.
Well, it looks like you guys are going to be employed forever. Because, oh my gosh, talk about navigating something that's just nebulous, scary. And boy, do you need to have somebody like you in their corner.
And here's the thing, though. Yes, there are risks, but the risks are only unacceptable when you don't know what they are. And so this process, advisors transition every week.
Oh, sure.
And the strategies look very different. So it would be a mistake to say, well, my buddy transitioned this way, I'm just going to do the same thing. You could have very different factual circumstances. You could also have very different clients, that clients will respond favorably to a particular strategy and they will not respond favorably in other cases. And so it is a very highly personalized process, and it's one that advisors are used to doing due diligence. They do it every day. They have to do that with their business. And when they're talking about making a move, understanding what their own risks are and how to control those risks as best as possible, that's really their main objective.
So if somebody is, after listening to this, obviously they're going to have an enormous amount of confidence in your experience. What is the best way for them to reach out to engage you?
So the best way is to just reach out. You can send us an email, shoot us an inquiry over the web, and we're happy to engage promptly. And the earlier we get started in the process, mm-hmm. the better we can help them avoid throwing up red flags that they're a flight risk, or avoid creating risks that they're not even aware they're creating.
Sharon, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'd like to have you back, if that's okay. I have a strong feeling that after I listen back to this, I'm going to realize I should have asked you a whole bunch more questions. Would that be okay with you?
Sure.
Magnificent. So this was Sharon Ash, Chief Litigation Officer of the Hamburger Law Firm. We are live at the Market Council Summit here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. If you are a financial services professional who is looking to break away, if you have an existing firm and you're looking at somebody that you'd like to recruit, or if you have some regulatory enforcement challenges, please go ahead and reach out. We'll make sure that we have all of the links in our show notes to the Hamburger Law Firm. This is what they do. This is who they are. And they can help you really get the practice and the career that you've always wanted. So for everybody at Hamburger Law, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at iris.xyz.